Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, Gabe, Giannis, and I were on the mic. We're talking about the Yeti question of the day, which is the best way to mentally get through injuries. This was a good topic to discuss. We also talked about Mel O'Brien, who's a CrossFit figurehead. She was definitely positioned to, I'd say she was the favorite to win the CrossFit Games this year. She pulled out from the semifinals, therefore she cannot qualify for the games if she doesn't compete in those. We talk a little bit about, you know, our take on it, things that we could learn from it, and maybe lessons for the future of the sport of CrossFit. So definitely stay tuned for that. When we finish up, just talking about upcoming events we have going on. If you're in Pasadena for the semifinals, I will be there. I hope you guys are getting after it in the gym, getting after it on the mats, getting after it at home, whatever you're doing. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. Let's dive into a great podcast. Let's go. Did you see that Plunge released a new sauna?
Plunge released a new sauna. I didn't know they had saunas.
Plunge released a sauna. That's okay. A better way to put it. Yeah. Dude, this thing is badass. So obviously the Plunge is, I use it all the time for like cold therapy. But if I were to go buy a new sauna right now, I bought an Almost Heaven sauna and I would go buy one of these Plunge ones. So I'll send you a link when we're done talking, because the reason why, for anybody who's interested in the sauna, I have not personally used this one yet, but I have been in it. I just saw it when, I haven't gone in it when it's hot, but I saw the prototype when I was at their office in Sacramento. What's really cool about what Plunge did is they almost approached it the way like Apple approaches like new products. So there's some disruption in their Plunge, like the regular cold plunge. But in regards to the sauna, what they did is they created it. So you know how like normally when you're sitting on a sauna, you have the benches that are like flat. They have the capacity for the benches to go up now. So not only is their heater badass and looks clean and you can do it digitally, but more importantly, when I'm in my sauna, I can't really stretch because the benches are in the way. They made it so the benches can now fold up. So for anybody interested in the sauna, make sure you guys check those ones out before you purchase it, because I think they definitely revolutionized it in that sense. That's the first time I've ever seen that before in any sauna.
You know what's super interesting? Just from like a random branding and marketing perspective, is when companies like this, you know, call themselves like the company was, and it looks like they've rebranded to Plunge, but they were the Cold Plunge. Their URL is still thecoldplunge.com.
Right.
But clearly they've found the need to like expand beyond just having a cold plunge. Now they have a sauna, and it's just interesting of like how that fits in. And I'm sure it's a good problem to have. I'm sure they're doing well, but it's just interesting how, you know, you can go out there and maybe not have the foresight of calling it something that you could down the line have a sauna and a cold plunge and not pigeon yourself to, you know, we're the cold plunge, but we have a sauna. How does that really make sense? So just a random marketing thought that I had
as I poke
around their website.
And I'm sure for them, what they're thinking about from a marketing perspective is they rolled out this plunge. They did extremely well. They hit it very timely. I would say they're like the first to kind of, you know, now there's a lot of competitors. And I imagine what they heard from their target demographic was, hey, I use your plunge, but I also use the sauna. And over time, they're probably like, well, we should probably create something because we don't think there's any phenomenal saunas out there. I think that would be the argument. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that that's, it's interesting. I wonder a year or two from now, if you talk to them, was the sauna ending up being a distraction, or did it actually, you know, that additional SKU actually benefited their overall business because now they could hit the hot and the cold. So yeah, it's definitely something from like a marketing perspective and a business perspective to look into in the future.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because they have this pre-order where they're, you know, it's $250 refundable deposit. So you can secure your spot online. And I feel like there's so many companies out there doing that now, right? Like there's the EV companies, like vehicle companies are really well known for like, you know, you put $1,000 down. And it's an interesting business model because, you know, when I saw a tweet or something that framed it this way, and it's essentially what it is they're getting a zero interest loan of capital from their customers. Because Tesla, for example, when they launched the Cybertruck, the amount of pre-orders they had on it was huge, and they weren't going to deliver Cybertrucks. They still haven't. It's been years. But the amount of like capital they got from essentially what does it, because yes, it's fully refundable, but that just means that they're getting all this money and capital loaned to them at 0% interest, which I think is it's a really interesting way to leverage this idea of like pre-order and scarcity, and, you know, anticipation, while also getting, you know, a pretty nice capital infusion for the business, which I'm sure is going to help them, you know, build inventory and so on and so forth. So it's smart, man. And you see it more and more now.
Well, it's smart, but it only works if you have brand equity, right? So like if you take like a Tesla and they roll something out, or for example, I put on I got a Ford Lightning and I put a deposit the exact same way. So the beauty part is they could evaluate what type of inventory they're going to need, right? Because instead of getting, maybe they got 50 orders compared to 500,000 orders, they get the money, like you're saying, but it only works if the brand has value. So I definitely think it was smart for them to do that with the sauna. And now they could probably better allocate how many they should order. And like you said, they're getting this influx of cash that they probably don't need to go out and get a loan to, you know, get all this inventory. So yeah, good on them, man. I'm fired up for Plunge. So they're friends of ours. And so I want them to do well.
Yeah. And having a cold plunge in a sauna at your disposal is, I feel like I have to be careful how I say this, right? Because like, it's not the thing you need to be healthy and fit and whatever, but man, it's like such a nice to have. It's such a nice to have.
It's definitely a nice to have. For sure. If you're looking at like the grand scheme of like nice to haves, it's definitely on like the nice to have. Like now where I'm at in my life, I'd much rather have a sauna and a cold plunge than a fancy watch or whatever else. Like that's just where I'm at right now. So if you have to evaluate your spending on like nice to haves, I probably would spend on one of those instead of a nice watch. Anyways. Dude, so I do want to talk about Mal O'Brien, but before we get there, it was really interesting. I was training yesterday one of Caden's friends, and I was introducing him to the deadlift and the bench press. And he's a super athletic kid. I mean, he's great at baseball, great at football. He's just athletic. But all of a sudden, you take him out of those like athletic domains and you put him in like a more of a static, like lifting position. It's fascinating. The lack of awareness of connecting the brain with the body. Like I tried so many different cues to get his back flat. I mean, eventually we got it, but it took me so long. It's really interesting, you know, for anybody out there with kids, I just think that exposing them to like a neutral spine and a flat back position earlier on, just at least having them aware of what that means to get in that position, I think is valuable. So even if you just add that in, every blue moon, when you ask them to lift something up, I think that'd be really helpful because I see it firsthand how there's a disconnect between the position you're looking for deadlifting and what they think is a flat back.
How much of that is just a like
terrible coaching?
No, not that at all. Just him being young, right? Like how much of that is supposed to just come with age and as they kind of develop? Like, is the expectation that someone Caden's age should be able to like have that mind body connection? Because I mean, obviously this is one extreme end of the spectrum, but you know, having a 5 month old, dude, they have no connection, right? Like it's crazy. They're like the wobbliest, like they have no idea what's going on. They're like, their hands are like this, like they can't figure it out. So I wonder how much of it is just development through age and your kind of expectation of Caden, because you're so aware of that position versus like, that'll just come with time.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either.
These kids are 9 years old. And I think by nine, you should develop a conversation with the kids about how to appropriately lift off the floor. But to your point, like, yeah, they're not fully developed at all. But if you're talking about baseball skills, hey, choke up, do this, do that, boom, boom, boom. They're catching it like that. All of a sudden you have them put them in this domain and it's not. And I almost look at it like you're connecting like little neurons between your brain, your body. It's like little lines. And it's like, all of a sudden we're unlocking this. It's like the Matrix, you know, we're unlocking these things in these kids. And how's that going to correlate over to their sport? It just inspired me yesterday. Like I don't get upset. I don't get like whatever. I don't get frustrated. I get inspired because if you take a kid that's that athletic and you develop their athleticism off the field, I just think it's like unlocking potential. So it fired me up, man. It was good. I'll have to send you a video later on.
I think this is a good segue into the conversation around Mal O'Brien. So for anyone that because I know we have some people that listen that might not be like super diehard. I mean, I don't consider myself like a super diehard, like CrossFit game sport fan, but I follow enough accounts and I'm immersed in the world enough to have read about this and, you know, listened to a couple hot takes on it. But essentially Malibran, who was like the shoe-in per se of taking over the women's title with Tia no longer competing. Like she was definitely the favorite.
Definitely podium contender. For sure.
And in a lot of people's books, like it was kind of her CrossFit Games to lose. She's been very impressive. She's young. She's training with Matt Frazier. She kind of had everything going for her going into the season. She just announced this week leading up to semifinals that she wasn't going to be competing, effectively ending her season. She, in the post that she put out, kept it rather vague. Why was going to focus on other things in life, so on and so forth. So immediately, you know, Instagram speculating, whatever. I heard some people like saying that, you know, could have been a pop drug test because it was a week right before semifinals, whatever. I think Andrew Hiller actually had a really good take on why that definitely wasn't the case.
No, I don't think that's the case at all.
No.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, like if you go into the comments, you'll hear every possible reason and every, you know, hater out there, like giving the reason why she potentially pulled out. I also definitely don't think that that's the reason, more so because like she's also at the point of the sport where like even if she were taking something, like she's not popping a test. Like these tests now are more like, you know, IQ tests than anything else about like figuring out how to do it. But that aside, I don't think that that's the case. But I think the really interesting conversation that this has sparked in the space is the pressure involved in at such a young age diving like head deep, like diving full force into the sport of CrossFit, you know, because before, you know, you look at athletes like Rich, yourself, you know, everyone that was dominant back in the day, it was people that had, you know, quote unquote, a normal upbringing with sport and athletics where they were doing baseball, they were doing sports, they were wrestlers, they were weightlifters, found CrossFit, were able to train really hard and become, you know, these generalists and go to the CrossFit Games. But this new breed of athletes, these are teen CrossFit Games athletes that are literally just doing CrossFit from their teens. They're not playing volleyball, baseball, football, nothing. They're in the gym, working on their weaknesses, working on their weightlifting, hitting Metcon, so on and so forth. And I think, you know, with Haley Adams also having pulled out, I think it was last year due to, you know, just kind of the stress and citing mental health, it's an interesting conversation about what does this say about the future of the sport if this new breed of athlete, this younger breed of athlete is struggling with the pressure of what is a sport that is incredibly, incredibly demanding. You know, I'm not saying that other sports aren't demanding, especially if you want to be the best of the best, but I think there's something forgiving about playing team sports as you grow up and playing different sports as you grow up and having an off season and having a season and doing it with your peers at school and so on and so forth, versus now where a lot of these teen athletes are spending their entire day and season and year round in the gym, just like, you know, going really hard.
I have a lot of thoughts on this, but what was Hiller's perspective? I haven't seen that.
His perspective was essentially that it doesn't bode well for the huge future of the sport, because especially, you know, for women, and he kind of drew the analogy of like women's gymnastics, right? Women's gymnastics, to be like incredibly successful at like the Olympic level, you have to be good very, very young. And it takes like 24/7 dedication. And now there's been a lot of, you know, it's been brought up that that does lead to, you know, certain eating disorders and certain just like pressure. And it's just not the most ideal for longevity way to grow up, saying that you're going to be the absolute best gymnast in the world.
Yeah, and a good parallel, actually.
And the parallel there between now, like wanting to be the best CrossFit athlete in the world, because also if you look at who's winning or who's getting to the top of the podium in the CrossFit Games, it's getting younger and younger, right? As young people get into the sport seems to, you know, lend itself to youth being the most successful. So it's
mainly
kind of
recovery is just a huge factor there, but yeah.
Right. So it's kind of, it's starting to inch in that direction of, you know, is the future of the sport 5 years from now going to be, you know, 16, 18 year olds battling it out in this sport that is incredibly demanding, that takes a lot of work and is a lot of wear and tear. And what does that say for, you know, the future of the sport and how those athletes will age as they go? And is that a problem for CrossFit Games, the sport, if that's the way it's going?
I think all of it is really important to unpack. So I think what's really, I don't want to say that this is, Matt O'Brien doesn't owe anybody anything. I think that's really important to recognize. Like, she could tell anybody whatever she wants. If it's, if it was, I read somewhere that she had had Lyme disease a couple of years ago. I wasn't familiar with that. It doesn't matter why she pulled out, but it's hard not to speculate that it wasn't because of mental health. Like, it's hard not to assume it was because, dude, she's been in this thing and she has a lot of pressure on her. I fell to the pressures of going in, you know, when I won the CrossFit Games, I went in the next year and, dude, there was a lot of pressure on me. And this is back in 2008 when there was only thousands of, you know, and even the online present wasn't the same. And then all of a sudden going in 2009, I finished fifth. I have a lot of pressure going in 2010. Then there's pressure for the next X amount of years until I'm back on the podium, whatever. But you learn to cope with it over time. And like, I grew with the sport, and I don't envy people who come in, who see some early success, who are hardworking, all these different things. And all of a sudden you get a lot of noise from a lot of people, and social media just magnifies it. And then all of a sudden you put stress on yourself, and man, it's a very difficult sport to be in. And I think that I would encourage any parent to really be careful about their child being like 16 and dedicating themselves fully or moving across the country to train for CrossFit, or even younger. You know, I think I told you this. I had a mom reach out to me, and her boys were 13 and 14. She said they were on the cusp of making semifinals or the games or whatever it was, and she wanted me to train them. And I told them that I just wasn't the right fit, that I would encourage them, if they really want to be good at CrossFit, like if that's ultimately their goal is to go to CrossFit Games, I think what's best for them is to take one step back to get 10 steps forward, go play other sports, go do a bunch of other things, go develop these different skills. And then when they're ready, as they're maturing, 18 years old, 19 years old, CrossFit will still be there for them, and they could pivot back into the sport full time. I just think what happens is, as these kids, you know, Hinshaw said something that was really interesting. He was talking about Haley Adams and how, I guess someone at, I don't know if it was ESPN, had asked, why don't you work specifically on Haley's sprinting? And this is when she was younger. And he said, it's because I don't know how she's going to evolve as an athlete over time. I'm just trying to work well-roundedness, because if we focus on one thing, she might naturally build out to be a great sprinter, but we're just going to work a bunch of different things. And I really worry, Gabe, that the youth is not setting themselves up for long-term success because they're getting too caught up at too young of an age. And I think that especially, you know, when I used to race BMX bikes, one of my biggest regrets is I raced BMX bikes for a long time. I got into it when I was 9 and I was super competitive. I traveled the country. I raced nationally. I was sponsored by Fox and different brands for a while. I was really into it. And I raced, not professionally, because you couldn't turn pro until you're 16, but I raced at a high level from when I was 9 until I was 15 or 14 and these years. And during that time, dude, I had no friends at school really, because I wasn't connecting with them because I was so bought in on the BMX. And BMX is an individual sport, very much so like CrossFit is. And even though I was around other people that were competing, the bonds weren't the same as if you were on a team. And I regret not playing other sports, because I would have made friends. And then I got to high school and I started playing other sports and changed my life. So that would be my advice for parents, is to encourage a bunch of different sports, and CrossFit will still be there for them, because that's ultimately what they're doing anyways. If you go out there and you're training football, you're training baseball, you're developing CrossFit skills.
You know, I think that the challenge there though is, I do think that there's something to be said about, like, for example, the two kids that you mentioned, if they do start doing exclusively CrossFit now, I do think that just because of the nature of the sport, they're getting a step up on someone that's going to go do football and go do baseball and then come back to it later. Like, they are. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I'm just saying that, like, if you want to call a duck, like, this stuff, you get better at it the more you do this stuff.
Yeah,
like,
true.
Yes, you're going to come in with an athletic background and you'll be a step ahead of someone that doesn't play football, baseball, you know, run track. You'll be ahead of them. but I don't necessarily think you'll be ahead of the person that's been doing Metcons and Olympic lifting and squatting heavy since they were 13. So it's unfortunately, I think, a catch 22, because while I 100% agree with you that I think the best thing for most kids at that age is to go try different sports, play with teams, expose themselves to as many different, you know, things as possible. I think that unfortunately, to be successful, the way the sport is trending requires you to start early. And that's where I think there's an issue that needs to be addressed. And I think that the other thing that makes this super tricky is I can't think off the top of my head, except for the gymnastics example, but even there, like the stardom that comes with the sport is really only every 4 years, right? Like you don't hear of top level gymnasts unless it's the Olympics. And then you hear of like the top athletes. I think one thing that makes this dicey is that these really young CrossFit Games athletes are gaining a lot of notoriety. They're in many ways more popular than some of the OGs. Like Mal O'Brien had a huge following. And I think in other sports, whatever it is, baseball, volleyball, whatever, even in college, there isn't that fame that comes with it, right? Like the fame comes when you make like the pro levels, to which point you've matured a bit. You've had some maybe fame in college sports, like you're popular on campus, whatever. So you're also not being thrust from being, you know, a 15-year-old teen trying to figure life out to now you can't go to the Rogue Invitation without people wanting to take pictures and like get your autograph and so forth. I think that there's a very heavy pressure to that as well. And I honestly can't think of any other sport where the youngest athletes are just as famous, if not more famous than like everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think gymnastics is a phenomenal parallel because you get kids when they're really young. I mean, I think if I'm not mistaken, especially females, hit their peak in gymnastics, like at, I want to say like 13, 14, 15, like pretty young, right? I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that when, by the time they go to the Olympics, I think you're old at the Olympics if you're like 18, I think. You could look that up, but I'm pretty sure it's that young. And there's a lot of parallels to that. You know, maybe what they could do, Gabe, is if you want to specialize in CrossFit and that's important to you, maybe there's a way to make it where the teen division is all team based. I don't know. It's just, I think it's the individual base. I think it's the lack of connection. I think it's the fact that you're training in your garage by yourself and you go to the gym by yourself, then you're doing this by yourself and you're young and you're still maturing mentally. I think a lot of that becomes an issue. It's a big conversation that I think needs someone to just speak about it more and more and more, because we want to see the sport grow in a really organic way. And I'd make the argument, I wonder what the statistics would look like if you took people who started off cross when they were young, like 12, 13 years old, and you looked at the average span they perform it versus if they started when they were like 17 or 18 and how long they do it. I wonder if people get burnt out when they start too young, and when they actually go to compete, they just burn out versus if they waited, they don't burn out as much. I don't know. It'll be hard to look at those analytics, but it would be interesting to find out.
Yeah. It's an impossible situation, unfortunately. But I mean, I guess the one bright spot, because I agree with you. I think Mal O'Brien doesn't owe anyone anything, doesn't owe them an explanation, obviously doesn't owe having to compete. But I think that at least, you know, we should be appreciative of the fact that, you know, this conversation is happening, because I do think that it's important. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we all started CrossFit and kind of became a part of this movement to help people be healthier, right? To like improve people's lives. And I think that if anyone is, you know, it's becoming a slippery slope to where it's actually detrimental, I think that we should be having a conversation about that. And it'll benefit everyone. Let me ask you a question. I'm curious, has Caden ever, like, you know, from watching you back in your competition days, like, does he talk about like wanting to compete and do that competitively? Or is he like so all in on like baseball and football and like he works out because that'll make him better at those things?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question because, you know, my kids see me work out all the time. They obviously know that I have accomplished some stuff in CrossFit. When we go places, people, you know, yeah, we're in the airports, people recognize me. They're like, what's going on? Well, they know. They're at an age now where they get it, right? They could just Google their last name and stuff comes up. So no, I mean, neither one of them have any interest at all. They've never talked about it or brought up. the fact they want to do anything in regards to CrossFit. And I think the reason for that is Caden, every blue moon, talks about doing a powerlifting meet, which I think would be pretty funny. But I think it's because we don't encourage it. I think that we look at CrossFit as a program that we do to help us live a healthy lifestyle for the rest of our lives. And we're not focused on it as much as a sport anymore. And so because of that, I think that culturally translates to the kids. So I don't know though, Gabe. It might just be his interest too, because he's so interested in baseball, football, traditional sports. Maybe if I pushed it more, maybe he'd be interested, but I don't know. He doesn't have that natural inclination to want to go compete in CrossFit. And I also have never encouraged it. So maybe it's a double-edged, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting, man. It's wishing her the best. Obviously, you know, we don't know kind of what's going on, but I'm sure it was a very tough decision to pull out. I'm sure it wasn't easy regardless of what the reason was for it. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know her. I don't know if you know her, but,
dude, definitely just how many other sports are like this? The money, the fame,
nothing,
at the age?
Man. Nothing.
Oh, right. No, yeah. I mean, I'm being completely serious. Like,
dude, so am I, because even in the Olympics, there's a lot of fame and stuff, but I feel like there's a benefit to that being every 4 years, you know, it's kind of cyclical. Even if you're like the Simone Biles, I mean, maybe that's a very extreme example, because she's literally so incredibly famous.
Remember Simone? She like,
oh yeah, she backed out because of, yeah.
It's like,
what I'm saying is, even if you're someone that popular, I feel like when you're like in the midpoint between Olympics, I feel like you can kind of live some extent of a, you know, normal life. I don't know. I'm making assumptions, but I'm just saying, like, their big showcase is every 4 years. So I do think that things die down enough to where I'd like to think that for, you know, even like a Olympic hopeful in gymnastics, there should be a point where it's not, you know, the pressure cooker of pressures. Whereas I feel like because CrossFit is this like big deal every single year, it's almost like the games is over and you're like, all right, here are my weakness. Like, you got to get right back on the horse. Well, and I'm sure that there are similarities there, but it just seems very, very extreme for athletes that are that young.
Well, I remember, like, it would put a lot of pressure on myself and my family for years. I did the Open, regionals, games, Team USA, years in a row. And if you think about that, after Team USA was like, let's just say it was like a couple months after, you had like maybe 2 months of an off season, maybe. And then you had to start getting ready for the Open-ish, maybe 3 months. I mean, if you think about that, look at Mel, look at the people that are doing the Rogue Invitational right now. Then they're doing the Open, quarterfinals, semifinals, games, Rogue Invitational, and any other events that were going on. It's a lot, to your point. There really isn't an off season right now. And I think that, you know, there's two ways to look at this. On the one hand, you could look at it and say, hey, look, it is what it is. If you're mentally struggling, just exit the sport. That's one way to look at this situation. Another way to look at it is like, hey, we have an obligation as a community to assess the sport and ask, is this set up for longevity for the future? We're already seeing these signs. What can we learn from a sport like gymnastics to start evolving today so that things like this don't burn people out? I don't have the answer. I'm just saying, like, I think it's worthy of more conversations like this.
For sure. I mean, I definitely don't have the answer, but I thought it was an interesting conversation that I honestly hadn't thought about it at all. And again, I'm not like super immersed in the sport anymore. I used to be, but I thought it was, you know, it definitely, especially with, you know, Haley Adams pulling out just last year, I think it starts to feel like a pattern. And like you said, it's still really early, but I think that there's an opportunity there to hopefully have a conversation now, so it doesn't become like a problem that the CrossFit Games as a sport is known for. Cause that would be a shame, right? Like, yeah, we want to see the sport grow. We want to see the community grow. We want to see the affiliate community grow. And we've talked about this before. This is all very intertwined. And for some people that are outsiders looking in, you know, if they were to start reading or hearing stuff about like, well, CrossFit, the sport, is bad for mental health, that does hurt the affiliate community. It does hurt because these things are intertwined. So I think that it it behooves us to have the conversations now and figure out if there is a solution so that it doesn't become something else that's out there hurting the brand in any way, because that's not what I want. That's not what you want. I know that's not what people want.
The youngest age group, if I'm not mistaken, is 13 to 14. Is that correct? I'd have to double check.
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's 13 to 14. And, you know, one argument would be to get rid of that. Let's see. I'm curious.
Yeah, because it encourages people to start competing early, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Let's see. Age group. Yeah. Okay. 14 to 15. Excuse me. 14 to 15 is, it goes 14 to 15, 16 to 17. And so you can make an argument that let's remove the age group, and it gets back to what you were saying, where it's almost like you're getting ready for the Olympics. So let's just say you remove the age group, or maybe age group is only team-based, for example. Would that help the longevity of the sport? I mean, I think that that's a super interesting conversation to have. I mean, dude, 14 to 15, that's young, man. I mean, you're what? Some of these guys are in eighth grade or just starting. 14 to 15, you have an eighth grader who's going to the CrossFit Games. Freshman year, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
Hey, you know what's random fact? I just wanted to shout out. A couple weeks ago, I went with my wife to a wine tasting. Okay, and I wrote this down. They have crews of hard ass working people putting in the work in the middle of the night to pick the grapes. This is in particular with Pinot, because they want to be able to get the grape at its coldest time. And that's in the middle of the night. And so they have these groups of just hardworking people that come in and they go and they pick grapes all across, but they do it in the middle of the night. So the temperature of the grape is at its coldest when it actually gets pulled from the vine and put into a cistern. I didn't know that in this particular case, they pull in the middle of the night versus during the day. I just thought I'd share it with you. I had written that down as a unique random fact.
What a segue. What a transition, man. Jason Kalipa, specialist of transitions on the podcast.
Dude.
All right. Dude. And with that, let's go to the Yeti question of the day.
The Yeti question of the day.
This is how Jason's brain works.
Dude, the Yeti question of the day is, what is the best way, from our boy Jay, what is the best way to mentally get through injuries? And here's the best advice I have about that. And I think this is like, I can't remember who I heard this from. So I'm stealing this from somebody. It might've been you, or it might've been someone else like a decade ago.
It was probably you.
Is let's just say you have an injury. So for example, my knee was hurt for a while. It's getting better. Still a little wonky, but it's better. It's so easy to focus on what you cannot do. It's so easy. Like, dude, I hurt my shoulder. I can't do overhead pressing. I can't do bench pressing. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's so easy to dwell on that because it is such a major factor of your lifestyle. But if you focus on what you can do, you'll find that you could probably do more than what you can't do. And if you take your time, energy, and attention and focus on what you can do, I find that puts you in a much better state of mind. So for example, my knee. It's like, dude, my knee was messed up. It's like, it's impacting my quality of life. Damn it. But what I can do is I can do a lot of upper body stuff. I can do a lot of abdominal type stuff. I can do a lot of cardio type stuff. I can do a bunch of stuff that doesn't put my knee in like a deep flex position. So focus on all of that as I rehab and improve my knee would be the focus. If you are overcoming an injury, focus on what you can do, because chances are you could do a lot more than you think you can.
You know, Jay, I think that two things here. And I think this actually plays off of what you just said, Jay. And it's the fact that, like, I think that, and I've said this before, I think people grossly underestimate how much it takes to like gain new muscle, gain new fitness, like actually make like significant progress, especially when it comes to building muscle. Like, people really underestimate the fact that you have to work very hard and be very focused and very intentional, unless you're a newbie, right? If you've never picked out a weight before, you're going to squat once and you're going to put on muscle. But for a lot of people that have been training for a while, it takes a lot of work and you have to be very intentional. However, on the flip side, I think a lot of people overestimate how much it takes to just maintain. And the reason I'm bringing this up in the context of like dealing with an injury is I think a lot of people, when they hurt themselves and can't do some things, they immediately go into this spiral of, I'm going to lose all the progress I've made. I'm going to lose muscle. I'm going to lose fitness. Like, it's the end of the world. And I think that if people really step back and realize that it doesn't take that much for you to just maintain, just stay where you are. Like, are you going to get fitter during this time? No. But if you can still, you know, to your point, your knees hurt, you can still do some upper body stuff. You can still maybe get on the ski erg and do some cardio. You can still, you know, go out for a walk if it's just that you can't squat heavy. There are so many things that you can do that you can absolutely 100% without a doubt hit the threshold of just maintaining where you are. But the problem is people stress themselves out because they feel like they're going to lose all the hard work they've done. They're losing gains. I'm losing muscle. I'm losing fitness. And it's that spiraling out of control and that additional stress that makes you throw your hands up in the air and not do anything at all, or just, you know, go into like, woe is me for an extended period of time. Now, I very much understand that there are some injuries that it literally feels like you can do nothing. And I think you remember this. So I herniated two discs in my back, really, really bad, to the point where every morning to like go out the door, Ariel, my girlfriend at the time, fiance at the time, wife now, had to tie my shoes for me. I couldn't tie my shoes. Like, I can slip them on, but I couldn't bend over to tie my shoes. It was like the most excruciating pain in the world. And I remember at the time, it felt, because fitness was such a big part of my life before, like it felt for a while that like, I'd lost such a big piece of like who I was and like what I needed to do to just feel okay on a day to day that honestly, I was like grumpy all the time. I was irritable all the time. Like, chronic pain is something I don't wish on anyone. That said, the thing that like absolutely saved me mentally was finding that swimming, which I had swam in college, was the one thing I could do and be pain free. So what I did is I went to the community center in Campbell before going to work every single day, every day during the week, Monday through Friday, I would go and swim for an hour and swim like hard. Like I went back to like how I was training when I was in college. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to find something when it literally felt like I could do nothing that was pain-free. But that helped me so much because I was able to like scratch that itch and do something. And I think the takeaway there is that like, if you do try hard enough, there's going to be something that you can do. It might be holding isometrics. Like it might literally be like holding, you know, an L-sit hanging, if that's all you can do or whatever. There's ways that you can challenge yourself that might be very different than what you're used to and work around any injury and get there. I think you just have to A, put in the work to find what that thing is, and also like reset your expectation of how much you need to do to just maintain where you are. Give your body the time it needs to heal and not try and like force progress during a time when you're injured. Because I think that that's where people end up extending their injury even longer because they're like, well, gosh, I can't go a month without doing anything. Like my knee hurts, but let me just try and squat light. How about not squatting at all for a month and giving your knee like the ample time it needs to rest, right? Like, no, but what if I do a little bit here? Like, no, you're just making having to take a month off turn into having to take 3 months off, turning to 6 months, turning to your knee will never be the same again. And I've been there. So I think that that's also important. And this is the maybe like tough love part of the answer is like, take a step back, put the ego aside and like actually do the thing that you know deep down you need to do to let your body heal. Because otherwise, like you're just having this mentality of like, well, it's not that bad for me. I know it's bad for everyone else, but it's not that bad for me. I'm going to do a little bit here. It never works. Never. Trust me. Take it from me.
No, dude, I needed that advice for my knee. You know, my knees is close.
I think I gave you that advice.
Yeah, it's close. It's not quite there yet. It's just, it's close. One other thing to think about, I was talking to Hinshaw about this. So yesterday we were doing a webinar for Customs and Border Protection. We were doing a private webinar for them. And one of the questions was in regards to essentially losing muscle mass because of running, et cetera. And one of the things that Chris said that I resonated with, he's like, the faster it is for you to see the result, the quicker it is to go away. The slower it is for you to see the result, the slower it is to go away, right? So let's just take muscle gains, right? It takes a long time to build, you know, I don't know, 20 pounds on your back squat or whatever, or additional size of your quad or hamstring or whatever. It takes a long time, big commitment, but you could gain some general aerobic capacity pretty quickly. Like if you start hitting the assault bike or sprints or echo bike or whatever for a few weeks, you'll gain some good cardio gains pretty quickly, but they go away pretty quickly too, but you can get them back. Whereas strength gains, like if you've been working your ass off for years and you get injured, chances are when you get back to it a month or two later, you're not really going to lose that much because your foundation, that framework, brick by brick was built. And it's just something for everybody to remember. The longer it took you to build it, the longer it's going to take to go away. So don't trip about those things because those are the ones you normally trip over.
That's it, man. That's it. It's so true, man. Like, especially when it comes to like even cardiovascular fitness, right? Like I swam all my life and put a lot of time in to like developing that system that now, even though like I am doing just bodybuilding type training, like it's still there. Like yeah. The baseline is there. And that was important for me too, because for a long time, I know that a reason that I wasn't putting on size is because I always felt like I needed to be doing both so that I didn't lose one. And, you know, for people that are hard gainers that aren't going to, you know, look at weights and gain muscle, you kind of have to take a foot off of the cardio gas for a second and really let your body be in a caloric surplus to grow. And if you're so concerned about like not losing your engine that you have to train cardio twice a week, you might just be making it a little bit tougher for you to get your A goal, which is to put on size, and know that that base is always going to be there, especially if you put in the time to build that base. And I think that me making that realization really helped because it made me feel like I didn't need to train 7 days a week and make sure I was working on everything because I didn't want to lose anything.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, you ready for another right turn? So I'm going down.
You got to buckle up on this podcast.
Dude,
I'm going down. You got to buckle up and you better not have motion sickness.
Dude, I'm going to Pasadena. This episode is going to release on Thursday. So tomorrow, when you're listening to this, I will be in Pasadena at the semifinals. I'll be doing some commentating. So if you're watching online, make sure to check that out. It's the CrossFit Games semifinals. I'll also be doing two talks. One of them is on this idea of forging elite leadership. It's something we've been kind of tossing around here at NC Fit about this concept. And I'm really excited to talk about bringing immersions to NC Fit. So if you're a gym owner, if you're just someone who wants to improve your leadership skills, stay tuned for what we're releasing on that front. And if you're at the semifinals, come see me and you listen to this podcast, make sure to try and find me. I'll be at commentating and I'll be doing two different talks. I'll also be headed to Europe. And so if you are going to be in London, Chris Hinshaw and I are going to be doing an event at WIT. So stay tuned for that. And if you're in Rome and you're a gym owner, hit me up because I'll be there for a little bit too. So I just wanted to spit a few of those ideas out.
The Jason Kalipa tour.
The Jason Kalipa tour, a little bit of that. But no, in all seriousness, if you're a leader in the gym, yeah.
You also didn't mention Chicago.
Oh,
June 2nd.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Two Brain. So is Gabe. So if you're going to be at Two Brain Summit in June, Gabe and I and MDV will be there and we're going to have a hell of a time. So make sure if you're there to come and talk to us because we're going to be talking about a few different things that we're launching and we're going to be giving some really great talks on Coach Like a Pro and forging elite leadership, talk about virtuosity as an owner. It's going to be good.
And then I'm going to tack on to that. I'm going to be in Nashville.
Ooh.
July 12th to the 15th, the Gym Accelerator Summit. The big guy is going to be gallivanting through Europe. So he's unfortunately not going to be there, but I will be there as a one-man show. So if you're thinking about or in the Nashville vicinity, I know that there are still spots open for the Gym Accelerator Summit hosted by HSN and Push Press. So I'll be there for that event.
Dude, so we got to still follow up probably like a month from now on how HSN, how we rolled it out, lessons learned, probably like a month from now. Is that right? Give or take?
Yeah, I think we're close. You know, coming off of the fact that we had the challenge, we've now rolled out one-on-one coaching. The last missing piece of the puzzle is just incorporating everything into how we do sales at NC Fit. And then, yeah, I think we can definitely share some good takeaways on what worked, what didn't, and also what we're doing now, which hasn't been instilled just yet, but I'm super excited for it to be something that we start doing because I think it's going to be a game changer for our gyms.
Yeah, rolling out the nutrition was a nice value add. You know, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday And I was bringing up this idea of discipline buckets. And so this guy, you know, he's a hard charger at work, but he doesn't have the discipline for his personal life. And so he's overweight and he wants to get in better shape. And I was just explaining to him, like, everybody's got their own discipline buckets and, you know, people use discipline in different ways.
That's another idea you stole from me, the discipline bucket.
Totally stole from you. And, you know, no, you know, I know why I like the discipline bucket is because it makes me feel okay. Like sometimes I was like, you know, I'll see Ava, you know, do something every day. And I'll be like, damn, like, I really don't want to do that today, but I only have so much discipline. So I hold my discipline in other areas of life. But anyways, with this gentleman, I was explaining to him that we're rolling out accountability coaching at the gym. And I think it's going to be really well received for people who have a lot of discipline in their lives and other areas. But maybe when it comes to fitness, they at times struggle with that. So that's going to be something I think with the accountability and the nutrition and the fitness, dude, it's a win-win for everybody. I just want to see people get results. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, man, it's such a big piece. And I think why accountability coaching specifically is so important is, and I think everyone can relate to this in some extent, like whether it's nutrition, business, like even family stuff. Like for the most part, people know what they should be doing. Yeah. Like you have the information, you know what you should eat, you know, you should work out, you know, you should sleep, so on and so forth. It's the someone holding you accountable. It's the every week, did you do those things? Even knowing that someone's checking a checklist that you're going through, right? Like knowing that there are eyes on you completing it could be the difference maker between you actually doing the things you know how to do. I think that we overestimate how much we need knowledge. Like we don't really need the knowledge, right? If anything, I think we have too much information about what you should be eating, what foods are bad for you. There's too much noise out there. I think that what you should do is pretty simple. It's the accountability to actually do it that is tough. And it's, I think, where a coach can really help.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I'm so excited to start talking more and more about leadership skills, because I think that in our space, one of the things that we don't talk about enough, and our point, us included, is we've tried to talk a lot about tactics. And I think really what we need to talk about is a mindset shift and learning how to communicate effectively and learning how to inspire others on our team. And when it comes to your own discipline in different areas, it's like having someone hold you accountable, just like as a leader, finding other people to hold you accountable, I think is really important. So that's what we're going to be leaning into more and more and more, is more leadership style. And then obviously at the gym, having our leaders, our coaches, help other people along their fitness journey, I think is really important. Where those people are subject to experts in software engineering or whatever else they're doing, you can lean on our coaches for everything else. So stay tuned for a bunch of more stuff we have going on. But that's all I got, man. Dude, I'm fired up. I'm ready to get after these semifinals. I think it's gonna be a good time. I'm gonna be commentating. They're gonna try me out in three different ways. I don't know exactly what they are, but I hope I could deliver.
I'm sure you will. I'm excited to watch the stream so I can get the Jason Kalipa commentating. Dude, commentating makes all the difference in watching a sport. Dude, so let's end off with like a little side note. So yesterday, obviously this is going to come out in a week. So last Wednesday's Mets game was absolutely insane. Yes, they won. But so here's, let me give you a little backstory real quick. The Mets have been doing terrible. Like, remember how last year they were
thing.
Like,
no, but that's a good thing, because when they do well, then they suck at the end, right?
That's right. That's what I'm telling myself. So anyway, they've been having a really tough season. They're playing the best team in baseball right now, Tampa Bay Rays. And they have a whole bunch of rookies that came up from the minor leagues, and they're hoping that they can like spark the team. And they were down three separate times in the game. They were down 2-0, then they were down 5-2, and then they were down 7-5. And this was all in the later innings. And every single time they fought back and tied the game twice and then ended up winning. And that was amazing in itself. And I was watching the game because I'm one of those crazy Met fans that still watches games, even though they're doing bad. And even though like they're probably going to lose, but I'm so glad I was. But the commentator, Gary, who does the play-by-play, his call for when something good happens for the Mets is like 50% of my enjoyment of it happening. It's just, he does such a good job. And like, sometimes the Mets will be streamed by like ESPN will have the game, or like Apple TV will have the game. So it'll be different broadcasters. And dude, I can't stand it. I cannot stand, even if the Mets are winning, like just someone else commentating on the game that isn't Gary, Keith, and Ron, who usually do it, literally drives me nuts because they don't do as good of a job.
What do they do? So anyway, particularly, like let's just say they get a home run. Do they like Like, you know what I've noticed in Little League with Caden is that the umpires actually have like their own technique about like when someone gets a strike or is out, like it's pretty funny.
Oh, actually. Yeah. Oh, like, dude, umpires like, are the best.
And like when they get out, like they'll do like a spin. It's fucking, it's so entertaining.
Dude, an umpire also adds so much dramatics to a game. Like a really good strike three call by an umpire adds so much drama to baseball. Oh, dude, I love it. That's why like I hope that they never go to, because they've talked about doing like robot umpires where it's a computer that can tell if it's a strike or a ball, because a big part of the game is like just having to work the umpire, being able to like frame a pitch. Like there's, if you're like a really crazy baseball fan, like you really appreciate the game within the game that happens to get pitches called your way, to make sure that like, you know, you're framing the pitch right. And that would all go away if it's just a computer that can see exactly where the pitch is and technically call it a ball or strike. Plus you would lose like the dramatics of an umpire, which if you have an umpire that has a really good strike three call, dude, it is so exciting. It is the best.
I've noticed it at the Little League. I mean, like literally like, dude, this kid will like, you know, I don't know, he's like 12 years old, just like, dude, Structor, you're out. Wow. And like, does a spin, you know, like,
anyway. So fun. It's so fun.
But for the commentating, I am excited about it. One of the things I need to do is I hope that they utilize me at the games for the position I'm thinking of. But for semifinals, I got to go deep dive into some stuff so I could talk more intelligently. Like, I'm going to go test out some of these workouts, go mess around with it. So I could feel like I could talk more intelligently about the different things that are going on. And then add in my color and my flair for my background.
I mean, I think that would be, at least for me, a really interesting bit of information to have, because I feel like other people that commentate, you know, they know that like, oh, this person has had a good season, this person is good at that. Like, I think that where you could add a really cool angle to commentating is like, hey, I tested all these workouts. Like, here's the time that I got, here's where I got stuck, here's like what was really hard. Like, I think that people would really appreciate getting that from you. Maybe not sharing your final time because, you know.
Hey, you know what? You want to know why I don't want to share my final time? It might be faster than those competing. That's why.
That's right. That's right. You don't want to make them feel bad. But I do think that having that angle, because, you know, most people, no offense to the people that commentate on these games, like it's not a former CrossFit Games champion. Like it's not someone that understands what makes a test particularly challenging or what the strategy is. So yeah, I think that you testing them and bringing that insight to it could be super interesting. I would love that.
Dude, well, that's the plan. Well, stay tuned for semifinals. Make sure you guys check out the podcast show notes for all the different links to different things we have going on. And most importantly, rate the podcast, share it with a friend. If you get value, go back, check out the other episodes. And yeah, that's all we got, Gabe. Keep crushing it.
All right.